The Watson Weekly Podcast is sponsored by Avalara. For e-commerce brands, tax compliance gets more complicated with every new channel, state, product, and market. Avalara Agentic Tax and Compliance helps automate the work behind the scenes so merchants can deliver a smoother customer experience with accurate tax calculation at checkout, clearer visibility into tariffs and duties, and fewer surprises for customers when their order arrives. Avalara works with e-commerce platforms like Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, and more, helping teams manage compliance faster and scale with more confidence. To learn more about Avalara's e-commerce compliance solutions and explore resources built for growing e-commerce brands, go to avalara.watsonweekly.com for more details. It's July 13th, 2026, and this is the Watson Weekly, your essential e-commerce digest. Today on our show, Shopify comes for fake and paid reviews. Nike found a floor, or it found a refund. Walmart's ad platform play, and Target's marketplace and the curation ceiling. And finally, the Investor Minute, which contains three items this week from the world of venture capital, acquisitions, and IPOs. But first, in our shopping cart full of news, Shopify comes for fake and paid reviews. Here's a number Shopify would rather you not think about too hard. How many of the reviews you're reading on the App Store are actually real? Because this week they told us the answer is fewer than you'd like. And they're doing something about it. And there are two changes with one goal. Essentially, make star ratings mean something again. The first one is about incentivized reviews. And you kind of know the move. Leave us 5 stars and we'll unlock this premium feature, or we'll pay you to leave it. Or the quieter version when the feature stays locked until you go say something nice. That was already against the rules, but the rule was buried in the partner program agreement, which is maybe something no one reads until a lawyer makes them read. So Shopify pulled it out, made it a real App Store policy, and attached a consequence with real weight. Getting caught paying for reviews, and it's not going to be a warning, they're going to remove a big chunk of your reviews. And the part that should make some developers nervous, they say they've already found the apps doing this. So it's not even a go-forward thing. The list already exists. The day the policy goes live, the enforcement starts. The second change is fake reviews, and this one is going to touch honest people too, so pay attention. Shopify is expanding the signals it uses to decide whether a review is real, and it's running those signals on reviews that are already published, not just new ones. So over the first few weeks, a meaningful number of reviews are going to quietly calm down. And the wrinkle is, fake reviewers don't usually just hit one app. In order to look legitimate, they spread themselves across lots of different listings. So when Shopify kills one of those accounts, everything that account ever posted goes with it, including the review it happened to leave on your maybe honest app. So some of you are going to open your dashboard, see your review count drop, and maybe panic. But in most cases, you might have probably done nothing wrong. They're just getting cleaned up in the same sweep as the fraud. And the reviews that do survive are potentially worth more because they're the real ones. Obviously, this is overdue, and it is the right fight. Fake and paid reviews don't just fool merchants, they punish developers who did it the honest way and watch a competitor buy their way past them. If you build apps, ask for reviews through the API, ask neutrally, whatever that means, and ask real users. Reply to your 1 stars instead of burying them. And notice what Shopify said is coming next, app naming and copycat listings. That's going to be a much bigger cleanup and makes sense. This week was just the warm-up. Our second story. Nike found a floor, or it found a refund. Nike wanted you to read this quarter as a comeback, but there's some fine print here too. The headline says, fourth quarter net income up 407%, gross margin up 890 basis points. And if you kind of stopped there, you thought the turnaround maybe arrived. But what moved the numbers was back in February, the Supreme Court voided the tariffs. Nike turned around and booked $986 million expect to get back, and that refund did almost all the work behind the margin jump. It is real dollars, but it's also a one-time event, and you can't build a franchise on a court ruling. So looking at the full year, when a single quarter's rebate can't do the listing, profit actually didn't rise. It fell 3% to $3.1 billion, and revenue was flat at $46.4 billion. The parts of this business that were struggling a year ago are still struggling. And with Converse, sales fell about a third last quarter. The full-year operating profit went from $240 million down to $18 million. That's not a slump. It's something more. Then China, down 12% in the quarter. Nike has been telling us China would stabilize for a while now, and it hasn't. Of course, on the other side, running has grown double digits five quarters running, and pun intended, and it's added more than $1 billion in sales over that stretch. North America keeps growing its top line. That's genuine progress, and it's also narrow, though. The people who do this for a living can't agree on what they saw. Analyst Jefferies came out and called the bottom. Guggenheim says Nike isn't out of the woods yet, and Telsey thinks the soft demand runs all the way into 2028. Same quarter, three different conclusions from three different analysts. But what I keep coming back to is in one press release, Nike posted a 407% profit jump and cut its guidance for the first half of next year in the same release. A company that has genuinely turned the corner doesn't need to lower its own numbers a paragraph later. So to me, the question isn't, did Nike have a good quarter? The question is, has Nike found a floor or it just found the tariff refund? And the release won't tell you which. Our third story, Walmart's ad platform play. Walmart wants to be an ad platform, and the story is out of con this year, and it matters more than the rebrand that came with it. So what happened was Walmart pulled its advertising business under one vision. There's Walmart Connect in the US, Walmart Connect International, which runs in markets like Mexico, Canada, and Chile, and Sam's Club, whose ad arm just got a new name. Sam's Club MAP is now Sam's Club Connect. The three units stay separate, but they share technology and they share a pitch. And the pitch is scale, solutions, and signals. And if you strip the alliteration, it means Walmart sees what you buy online and in more than 10,000 stores and clubs and wants to sell that visibility to advertisers. Walmart says global advertising revenue grew 37% last quarter, and that Walmart Connect in the US grew 44%, excluding Vizio. Those are Walmart's own figures reported off a base the company doesn't fully break out clearly. The growth rate is worth taking seriously because it's been fast for a while now. The strategic logic holds up. Ad dollars carry margins and groceries don't. A retail media business drops far more to the bottom line than a cart full of, you know, bananas and groceries. And every retailer sitting on first-party purchase data is chasing the same Amazon playbook right now. Walmart just has more of that data than anyone, well, but Amazon. So the ambition isn't really a surprise. The execution is the open question, but there's a lot of reasons to be excited. There is real tension buried in the announcement, though. Walmart is promising advertisers one connected experience across all three businesses, while also promising that each business stays specialized for its own market. A shared platform running separate operations. That's a hard thing to deliver, and a press release doesn't prove you can do it. So what you should actually watch is not the growth percentage per se, it's actually the take rate. How much of every advertiser dollar does Walmart keep as the business scales, and does that hold as competition for retail media budgets gets tighter? This is where you find out whether this is a real platform or a bigger version of what already existed. Walmart has the shoppers, the data, and the margin incentive. What it still has to prove is that advertisers want the whole thing bundled rather than three good businesses they can buy at one time. And our last story, Target's marketplace and the curation ceiling. Target added Forever 21 and Clarks to its marketplace this week, and the headlines went to the brand names. Target Plus has been around since 2019. It launched as a curated answer to Amazon. every seller handpicked, no open flood of gray market resellers, and a few hundred brands with a lot of discipline. And for years, it's been kind of a rounding error. A Shopify deal in 2024 pushed the roster past 1,000 sellers and 2 million products. And it crossed $1 billion in sales, and Target put a $5 billion goal on it for 2030. But the headline skipped the real number. More than a half of Target's Korean beauty assortment now comes from brands Target does not own. K-Beauty caught fire on social. Target watched that demand build and it answered through the marketplace instead of its own shelves. And that's somewhat of a tell. Target's own buying cycle is too slow to catch a trend while the trend is still warm. And the marketplace is really the fast lane here. The house brands are kind of stuck behind it. And there's somewhat of a quieter move in the same release. Target is shifting laptops, televisions, and printers onto the marketplace. That pushes inventory risk off its own balance sheet and frees up store space for categories that earn more per square foot and turn faster. Less capital tied up for Target, and both happen at the same time. And the part where I would keep my eye on is Target's own AI agents now screen who gets an invite, more than 300 of them in production. Its products are live inside ChatGPT, Gemini, and Copilot, and first quarter marketplace sales grew close to 60%. Now, of course, if the machines decide who sells, and increasingly the machines decide who get found, human creation was supposed to be the pitch in 2019. And it's quietly kind of becoming a supervisory job here. Brands still want to get an invite for a simple reason. There's no monthly seller fee, you get exclusivity on a SKU, and a storefront that's growing while Amazon and Walmart are getting more crowded. So scarcity is somewhat of a good product for Target. And the hard part for Target, though, is the math. A curated marketplace stays, well, small. Amazon runs millions of sellers. Walmart runs hundreds of thousands. Target Plus is a fraction of either by design. Curation is the moat and the ceiling at the same time. You can't out-assort Amazon by hand-picking brands, but you can out-taste it, but taste has a hard cap on revenue. So the channel is working. What Target still has to prove is the channel this controlled can move a company this size. It's that time, friends, for our Investor Minute. We have three items on our menu today. First, Kroger announced it will acquire Giant Eagle for $1.65 billion. Is Greg Foran, the CEO, under pressure after the failed Albertsons merger? Second, Jersey Mike's files for an IPO. Private equity always, always wants an exit. What would Danny DeVito say? And finally, the Zero Proof acquired the new bar. The non-alcoholic beverage sector does continue to grow. That's all for this week. Till next time, Watsonians. Hi, I'm Rick Watson, CEO and founder of RMW Commerce Consulting and host of the Watson Weekly Podcast, your essential e-commerce digest. I write a newsletter you should subscribe to at watsonweekly.com, and you can find the podcast at the same location.